The first question that anyone wants to know is, do we see in the next 2 years specifically sort of like good tidings in terms of not just the investment, but this particular South to South, because this was now part of the new Global South trade, China and Russia aiming to help countries like like Namibia and South Africa, no, not South Africa, but predominantly Global South countries. Do we see in the next 2 years primarily a ramp up of Global South to South industrial development from China, specifically in Namibia's context?
Well, Namibia has existing trade agreements, for example, with the European Union. They have trade agreements, I think, most favored nation status, trading status with the United States, perhaps other parts of North America. And then they have the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, which was introduced in the Clinton administration and has been extended even once by the current administration in the White House today. So, you know, it makes sense that the government would extend trade agreements and deepen and make those trade agreements meaningful and bring fulfillment within those trade agreements. So it makes sense that our president would lead a delegation to China. China is a big market for many things. If you bring it down to agriculture, China is one of the biggest markets in the world for poultry. It's one of it's a rapidly growing market for beef exports, lamb exports,
Which we are now also featuring in. Yeah,
there you go. And yeah. I think even some of the new investments, Savannah beef processors, I think they have their eye on China. There was another abattoir coming up, I think, just about maybe 100 kilometers south of Windhoek. They have their eye on China. And so I think it makes perfect sense. I think one of the takeaways for me was the agreement to address the phytosanitary PSP protocols for the export of grapes from Austincourt. And I think for Namibians, you may feel that you're far away from a Chinese trade agreement involving grape exports, but there's a complete value chain. I won't get into it now, but I think we have to look at the entire value chain, the entire deck of cards. When we look at one particular commodity, there's an entire ecosystem around fresh produce which exists, which Namibians can exploit, and those links to the value chain have to be in place before a single grape leaves this country. We can talk about that shortly.
It's actually a good point that you highlighted there about the value chain dimension, because I watched a little bit it's not a documentary per se, but it's these guys that have their own YouTube channels, and the one guy explained this, how important something like warehouse. Okay, no, sorry, it's actually yesterday's discussion. I was mixing it up with another discussion. The one colleague we had here from another show, Francisco, he highlighted primarily that warehouses play a key role in value chains specifically. And specifically that Namibia has an opportunity for warehouses and erecting them all across the country. Probably that would also play a good role, a key factor for agriculture, because agriculture knows distances, work against the fresh produce, storage and all that. If we highlight into some of the particular talking points ultimately that came about, because the president noted in her own scenario that there will be foundational sectors that will try to help with this industrialization aims that she went and shared with the business community from China and so forth, is a scenario of that sectors like agriculture and mining and tourism have to play a larger role in terms of just being the bedrock, which in many natural cases,
commanding heights of the economy.
Basically, yeah. But they form as that foundation.
Main industry, yeah.
So obviously this means that these sectors have to play bigger roles, like agriculture, for example. How would we then see agriculture? I'll leave mining alone because mining does its own thing. But agriculture that has this particular sort of like burden to carry into the industrialization scope of things, because it's also part of the NDP6. How will we then see them try to bridge that gap?
Look, 90% of the opportunity within the ecosystem is not agriculture, it's agribusiness.
Yeah.
So agriculture, you know, many young people think of agriculture as putting a mahangu seed in the ground. putting a maize seed in the ground.
Having the cattle, having the goat.
Yeah, the livestock, which is a different sector. But if we just talk about the history of agriculture and its link to industry. Mm-hmm. So let's just go back to the United States. Why did the United States build the railway system from California all the way to New York? You're talking about somewhere in the neighborhood of close to 4,000 kilometers plus. Mm. So why was that? Agriculture is the foundation for industrialization and manufacturing. Mm. So if you think of a tractor, a single tractor, if you think of the plow, the disc harrow, the spike, the drag, the ripper, many of those implements involve manufacturing. But the idea came from the farmer because the farmer was trying to make his life simpler. Mm. But back to industrialization, the pressure to launch the railway came from the need to take fresh produce from places like Salinas, California, mm. or Needles, California, or Yuma, Arizona, all the way to New York City, to the big capital markets. Mm. So you couldn't do that with horse and buggy.
Yeah, it would have taken too long.
Right, so you needed a railway. So for the railway, part of the railway, one of the biggest value chains in the railway is steel, because you need steel tracks, and then you need a combustion engine, and then mm. you need all of these thousands of components that go into a train or into a train of cars, you know, up to 100 or 200 cars. So the beauty of agriculture is that it puts pressure on manufacturing and industrialization. Mm. So we had the horse, we had the ox, we had the horse, we had the mule, then we had the tractor. So that combustion engine was mainly, it was used for traction in agriculture. Mm. Then we had the truck, what we call pickups, you call buckies. Mm. Then we have the cars, then we have the lorries. And why were those products invented? Yeah. Why were they invented? The rationale behind them was to move agriculture. Why? Because the shelf life of lettuce, the shelf life of many different types of fruits is very short. And so mm-hmm. you needed speed. You needed a train that could run 24 hours a day. You also mentioned warehousing.
Yeah.
So if you think of the ecosystem for agribusiness, the farmer plants maize in Otavi. Another farmer in Omosadi plants mahangu. Mm. Well, you have a seed supplier, probably in India, that's selling pearl millet or that's selling maize out of South Africa, Panar. Then you have a fertilizer supplier that's selling to AgriGrow, or that's selling to Stark Ayres or another fertilizer distributor. So then you have the transport industry that has to transport that seed. It has to be shipped from India by ship to the port of Walvis Bay, and then it's trucked. The seed is trucked, the fertilizer is trucked from maybe Gauteng or Northwest Province to Namibia, et cetera, et cetera. Then behind that, you have companies that blend potassium, phosphorus, and nitrogen together to give you that 10-20-10 blend of fertilizer. Mm. So if you think of the ecosystem, you could say a Namibian young person today could be in agribusiness and not own a cow and not own 1 hectare of land because they might be driving a 5-ton refrigerated baki that's carrying carcasses of pork or carcasses of lamb or fresh produce to the various shops. I think we have 9 chains of grocery stores in Namibia. I think we have something like 400 different retail grocery outlets. And so every single day you have distribution. Mm. So you can be in the agribusiness value chain and own a transport company that refrigerates fresh produce or provides freezing cold storage for carcasses. So it's a huge industry. But the primary industry of agriculture places tremendous pressure on industrialization. Mm. So when will Namibia get to the point where, let's say we start by importing tractors, then we go to assembling what we call SKD, slightly knocked down, or CKD, completely knocked down, where we take the disassembled tractor and then we assemble it locally. And then we have VTC start machining parts, key parts of that tractor. And before you know it, the students at VTC or NEMT or what have you have created a tractor that is suitable for Namibian soils. Yeah. And so this is the gateway. Value chains give you, they unlock, they are the chapters in the book. Mm. If I was the dean of either business school at NUST or IUM or UNAM, I would say for your business students and your agricultural students, they need to be seated they need to have classes in the same classroom. And what one of the assignments could be, take the potato industry and unlock that value chain. We import over $100 million a year. I'm told from, I think principally from a company called McCain's Frozen Chips, 7mm catering cut.
Oh, so they also measure the frozen produce.
Yeah, so you have 7mm, 10mm, you have skinny fries, you have that sort of thing. You have the proper Namibian chips. But you mean to tell me that Namibia cannot produce the same cultivar of potato that stays white golden in the hot oil, that doesn't brown very quickly? That's a restaurant standard. You'll find that many of the restaurants here, I don't know about 2026, but a few years ago, they would not buy
the local
potato chips from a local producer because they needed that species. So you can see now, you plant a potato, you have to buy the seed. You need fertilizer. You need traction. Those are three industries right there. Those are three business opportunities for someone. Then you harvest it. You're going to need the paper bags or you're going to need the net bags. So that's an opportunity for somebody.
Then you need the storage.
Then you need the warehouse. So somebody has to build a warehouse where the temperature will not be above, let's say, eight to 10 degrees. And then finally, someone has to process that potato into a chip, then flash freeze it, and then package it in a 1 kg bag. So you've got plastic packaging. That's Namib Plastics. You've got refrigeration. So companies that provide cold storage or build the kind of farmer cold storage where he or she can hold their carcasses. So this is how we have to look at agriculture. Don't look at agriculture
as just the
limited to a maize farmer or to a livestock owner.
Yeah.
There are thousands, for every vehicle, there's 3,500 components that go into a car typically. Mm. Same with the Baki. So when you look at the agricultural industry, there are many opportunities. There are things called ag tech. We're using GPRS. We're using 5G. We're using these sensors in the fields, and they will tell us when to water our crops, when to water our spinach, when to water our tomatoes. And all of these products end up in these 400 grocery stores across the 14 regions. That's how we have to see this market. So when the Minister of Agriculture, Honorable Zamwani, when she's holding up that photograph about that regarding the phytosanitary protocols for the grapes, there's packaging for grapes, there's distribution, there's climate control for the grapes, there's the companies that do the paperwork, the outbound processing, your exporters, your inbound for all of the inputs and soil amendments that go into grape cultivation. So it's not limited. And that ecosystem extends beyond the place where the grapes are going to be cultivated. Mm. So as many markets as we can exploit for our industries, for livestock, for fresh produce, for grains, for legumes, pulses, beans, that sort of thing, that's a great opportunity. I think the last example I'll give you on that is if you go into any grocery store and you go to the bean section, the dry bean section of the popcorn, you'll see two brands. Anyone have a guess at what they are? Two brands.
Coo and Rhodes.
So that's in the tin can.
Dry beans.
So Lion.
Yes.
And Imbo.
Yes.
Lion is owned by Pioneer Foods, which is owned by Pepsi.
Oh, yeah. They're just down the shelf from the canned beans. Ooh,
there you go.
Yeah.
And then Imbo is owned by Tiger Brands.
Yeah.
So Namibia, there are three places in Namibia where you could really optimally produce beans. You could probably produce beans in more than these three places. Mm. But Arandas, Stampriet, and Otavi would be three areas where you could produce these particular beans, like cultivation in the wintertime, especially the lentils.
Yeah.
But most of these beans are packaged in a 500 milligram plastic bag, and they're branded. But they're all coming from outside of Namibia. If you look at the total consumption, you could get that information from the store managers of Vorman Fresh and Pick and Model and Spar and ShopRite and OK and Choppies and Ronnie and all of these others. Mm. There's nothing to stop a Namibian, if he doesn't want to produce the bean, identify a farmer that produces the bean, just buy the beans in bulk, buy 10 tons of beans, and then package them in these 500 gram bags. Put a nice brand on it. Put a celebrity. We have a lot of soccer or football stars. Mm. We have a lot of we've got the Olympian in Boma. I mean, talk to people and get that celebrity integrated into that brand packaging. why must we sit jobless importing things that we buy every day that we could produce
every day,
add value to, and then distribute to, you know, throughout our 3.2 million population in Namibia? So that's how we have to look at the president's visit to China.
Yeah.
She's doing an excellent job of selling opportunities in the country that will benefit, obviously, the Chinese, but they certainly will benefit the Namibians before those products leave the country.
There's another component also of agriculture. It's one that Helmut and I have spoken a lot about, Mr. Branch, specifically like the textile industry. I discovered like 2 years back, when I tried looking up, does Namibia produce cotton? And I discovered we actually export the cotton. But yeah, that's the same example, but we export the thing. And I discovered it on the UN, what's the UN website's name? The one, the whole data website, UN Comtrade, that platform. And the funny thing about it is, one of the things, obviously, for a country to naturally follow the industrial route is to try and sort out its immediate needs, like clothing, mm-hmm. like food, and these other particular small aspects where you can create
get so much more.
You get so much more with the ShopRite price, because we buy in bulk and pass the savings on to you. Save on 2 kg Real Good Frozen Mixed Chicken Portions, only 104 Namibian dollars 99. 5 kg Nice Rice Parboiled White Rice for 89 Namibian dollars 99. And 1 litre Clover Long Life Full Cream Milk or Low Fat Milk for a low 22 Namibian dollars 99 each. Deals valid until 19 July 2020. Get so much more with the ShopRite price.
Coming back, dear listeners, there from the quick break and from the quick ad break, Mr. Branch, where I just left off was like things like textiles, specifically clothes. There's a running joke we once had here at Eagle FM about Namibia not being able to produce its own underwear and its own toothpicks. I'm sorry for the listener for using that particular scenario, but we have the potential, obviously, to grow some of these crops, the ones like cotton, and to actually multiply it. But it's usually also, like you highlighted already, where's the garment factory? Where's the storage and the processing and all these other sort of like Lego parts that you need to associate close to? Is there still an easier way also to, okay, not easy, let me not use the word easy, but is that path still open specifically?
So I'm going to put my MBA hat on for this one, because here's a problem that we have in entrepreneurship in Namibia, particularly for a large community like Namibia that is transitioning from three industries, fishing, mining, and livestock, into row crop agriculture, what we call row crop agriculture. Mm. That transition is a very steep learning curve. So Namibia can produce cotton scientifically.
Mm.
There are pockets of the country, I would say, mainly along the Kavango River or Zambezi River, because it requires
a lot of water,
a lot of irrigation.
Yeah.
Or you need to be on top of an aquifer, but then the areas where we have strong aquifers don't always necessarily have good soils.
Yeah.
The second thing is you need good soil.
Yeah.
And you need to have the proper...
That one is the best one, yeah.
The proper soil, pH. Yeah. I can't think right now offhand, but I'm pretty sure that cotton is somewhere in the low sixes in terms of its propensity for hydrogen, so the pH. But then even if you can produce something, that doesn't mean that you have a business case.
Yeah.
So we can produce cotton in Namibia, but... it's doubtful that we'll ever produce cotton on the scale, for example, of Egypt, which has, you know, the Blue Nile and the White Nile running through it. The Blue Nile being 75% of the Nile. So, you know, you have to make decisions. You have limited capital. You have limited choices. And so what you want to do, let me go back to my university. You have all of these students at IUM, at NUST, and maybe we ought to create a challenge and UNAM. And pit the three universities against each other competitively and have the business students and the agricultural students kind of unpack the value chains. And so when I say unpack, what I mean is you said cotton, then you said warehouse, then you said distribution, storage, and all of those different components.
Mm.
What you'll find is Namibia is probably better served putting that capital and that energy and that infrastructure into food security. Many people don't know this, but during the peak of COVID, there was a rumor story floating around that some of the big retail grocery brands had 6 months of safety stock. And should that have been
depleted,
impacted or breached,
yeah.
they were only going to serve South Africa. So that means Namibia, Botswana, Zambia, Zimbabwe, we would have been left on our own. And I think that would be a better use of that.
Yeah.
But just because you can produce something doesn't mean there's a bona fide business case for that. So, you know, as an investor, I would not put my money into cotton in Namibia.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would put my money into cotton unless I was in the U.S. Secondly, hemp is becoming...
I wanted to get the... good,
an alternative, a substitute for cotton. And you'll find companies like Levi and that they're moving away from cotton because the yield of hemp, I believe, is much higher than the yield of cotton per hectare.
Even this brand, Woolworths, they are...
they're selling...
It's a blend.
Fiber products or a blend of...
Yeah, it's a hemp linen, hemp cotton blend.
There you go, because they're trying to cut down costs.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same for the pharmaceutical industry. So if you took an aspirin, it doesn't slide very well in the back of your throat because it's kind of starchy. Well, in the old days, cornstarch was used.
Yeah.
But look at the cost of, let's say, maize starch cost per hectare. Let's say it's $1,000.
Yeah.
With cassava, where you can just tear off a limb and stick it in the ground and the limb will sprout roots, it's significantly less. It can be maybe a couple of hundred U.S. dollars per hectare, the cost of without any fertilizer.
Yeah.
And so today, Nigeria is exporting cassava. They're semi-processing it. That's being shipped to the West into the pharmaceutical industry to help blister pack pills.
Yeah.
And so... You know, I think the Democratic Republic of Congo is the second biggest producer of cassava, but Nigeria is
number
the
one
exporter.
Yeah.
I mean, their export, whereas in DRC, it's consumed. So when you, you know, when you talk about things like cotton, you have to say, where is my competitive advantage on the competitive landscape? Where do I have an advantage?
Mm.
Where am I more cost effective in terms of cultivating, in terms of processing, and in terms of my labor, in terms of my distribution? Namibia would not be very high on the list in terms of companies, countries that would be competitive cotton producers.
Mm.
But things like, if you look at products that are typically grown in the desert, for example, if we go to Corrijos, beautiful downtown Corrijos. I spent my first 2 years there in Namibia in 1994. A product like pistachio, a product like, what's the spice that I'm thinking of right now? Saffron.
Yeah.
They grow quite well in these dry, you know, I'm thinking Corrijos, Fransfontein, Sesfontein. Those are the areas where they do
actually, no one thought
well.
About also about herbs, herb production, herbs
well,
and spices,
And the market for saffron, the demand for saffron has gone up because the supply has gone down. A lot of saffron was produced in, I think, Wazir province of Afghanistan, and because of the conflicts, and so in Iran was also a big producer of saffron. So the production has gone down. The demand has gone up. 1 kilo of saffron, high grade, is $15,000 to $20,000.
Yeah.
1 kilo. 1 kilo of spice.
That's the size of this bottle, basically.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then you've got things like pistachio nut in the world because of how it's used. So you produce it, even if no one consumes that in Namibia, that is a cash crop. It is a crop produced solely for its cash value. But I would say start with the products that will lean toward food security and are profitable within the domestic market.
Mm.
The last point I'll make on that is I have a friend. He's a great agronomist, great economist named Wandile Shlobo from South Africa, and he's written several books. The conflict that we're having now is you have countries like Botswana and Namibia that want to produce their own, which means downstream that's going to mean there's going to be some kind of negative impact on South Africa. And so the South Africans are advocating for free trade across the border.
Yeah.
No one knows this, but last year around September, the South Africans would not let us take, I think it was about 1,000 tons of tomatoes across the border.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they were eventually sold or rotted. But you can't say because we're in SACU that only South Africa can export and all the borders must be open. That means Botswana and Namibia would never develop the full value chain of their agribusiness sectors. And we are destined to do that because we have good leadership within our Ministry of Agriculture. So that's going to be a bit of a turbulent ride, I think, over the next couple of years. But I foresee Namibia becoming proficient down the value chain, not just producing the crop, but proficient in terms of storing, producing. We've just come across two apple varieties that can bloom in hot weather. And Namibia imports $140 million a year in apples. All you have to do is go to the Namibian Agronomic Board and read their annual reports from any of the last two or three years.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for us not to produce apple. I think we can produce it competitively at a price which is affordable within our market. I'm not saying the South Africans can't produce that more cost effectively, but they can produce the product cheaper, but we can employ our people and we can unpack the full value chain. So the production of apple, then you've got the processing into juices, the packaging that has to go, so we need more polyoaks or companies like that. Then you have distribution, so we need people to drive these 5, 10, 20-ton trucks. We need more of that. We need more refrigeration, so we need more of the air conditioning units that sit at the front of those canopies that carry this. We can ensure that the children that benefit from the, I think it's the child school feeding program, that they get an apple a day, which is known to reduce things like colon cancer and all types of illness among children. So it's a matter of when will Namibia exploit what is sitting on the table? Mm. But surely these things are sitting on the table. I think it's up to the universities and our high schools to create awareness that these opportunities are sitting there, because many of us think we're unemployed because there are no opportunities. Many of us are unemployed because we are not aware of the opportunity, or the opportunity is not necessarily visible 3D. Mm. It's our job, your radio station, myself, your colleagues, to just get that word out.
Yeah.
And if we can have a favorable impact on the operationalizing of agricultural policy, agribusiness policy in this country, then all the better.
100%. On that note, dear listeners, that has been Mr. Forrest Branch giving us a quick, it was quick because we can only have him for a year for so long, and a brief explainer also into some of the low-hanging fruits.
That's what it is.
The commonly used phrase, basically. Yeah. But on that note, dear listeners, we'll be taking a quick break and we'll be back on after this. And on that note, stay tuned for the home run right after this.